your platform, I think, is very much in line with what we like to do at our firm. Hey, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed hearing more about it, and certainly like to stay involved.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Cashing Out, brought to you each week by Hoban Law. With me today is my co-host, Dina Gelbert from Align Business Advisory Services. Hey, Dina.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Good. We have a busy show today.
And we do. There's lots more to talk about.
We have two more guests, but unfortunately, or I should say fortunately, Dina has to jump off.
I do, but it's all good things. I've got a call coming in to talk about this opportunity. Got to jump on those when they present themselves.
Absolutely. And I want you to. Why don't we talk a little bit about how we deal with, I'm not going to call them a cold call because we kind of know, but how do you qualify them? What do you talk to them about? What's the whole process of?
So traditionally what we do is when one of those calls come in, we just kind of start really more socially, kind of introductory, talk about who they are, what they're looking for. And then we talk high level about the opportunity. And through that, we start kind of catching on key words for those synergies. You know, we've talked in some of the prior episodes about keeping an eye out for those strategic themes or the areas that you really think the puzzle pieces are going to fit together for being the right partners. So in that, even just introductory phone call, we try to parse some of that out. And so we'll ask questions about what their investment strategy is, what they're looking, why this would be an opportunity that's of interest to them, that they reached out to us. And we try to kind of goad some of that information out to see if it's worthwhile opportunity and to continue vetting it after that.
One thing that I've seen happening is sometimes they're a combination of buyers. A and buyer C kind of worked well together and they're going to do it as a team, but they don't necessarily know each other or haven't worked together before. And, you know, it's your job to sort of identify these links.
Exactly. So as we have conversations and we're moving folks kind of through the process, those areas of opportunity kind of jump out to us. And so that's our job, is to be looking at the high level process and all the parties that are a part of it and identifying those opportunities. And then what we do is we try to set up subsequent meetings to introduce one another and talk about how those synergies might line up well, kind of creating the triangle, if you will, instead of there being three legs of the stool instead of two, gives it more strength and gives it more opportunity. And so we facilitate that process.
Well, I guess I'm just going to have to muddle through these extra calls by myself.
I know, I'm sorry, but hey, got to get out there, got to take these calls when we can, and hopefully we'll have some great news to report in next week's episode.
Let's hope, yeah.
By virtue of these conversations.
Let's hope. Well, you have a good week, and I know I'll be talking to you, but the rest of the listeners will talk next week. So thank you.
No, thank you. Talk to everyone next week.
All right. Okay, so now we have an investor that's going to be giving us a call. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Today's bull in the arena is Matt Nordgren from Arcadian Capital. Matt, welcome to Cashing Out.
Dan, always good to talk with you.
Matt, after going through the pitch deck, what were your initial thoughts?
Nice to see some growth. You know, for me, Dan, I always think it's important to have every conversation in this industry because I've never been in one where more amazing, unique, differentiating thoughts and ideas are applied to otherwise traditional lines of business, whether you're servicing or fundamental aspect of hemp or cannabis industry. Been able to see that this is a repeat thing for this business. You look at the founder and the management team, have had success in this same arena before, building something back in this business. One would have high hopes that there would be a similar level of success given the industry growth. Quite frankly, this is a repetitive thing that you'd find as characteristics of all of our founders. Have had success doing this before, high degree of confidence in them doing that again.
Okay. I think I saw on your website that you're invested in High Times, so you kind of know the trade show business because they do conferences, so you're familiar with trade show businesses. What kind of questions do you have for me with regards to our company?
Yeah, and some of this is in the deck and in the materials that I've been able to review. I always like to kind of ask some fundamental questions just because hearing it from a founder's mouth and the way they describe it, I think, is different than way one can read it or interpret it. So my first question really is, can you tell me about the growth in revenue in year one, two, three, and projections kind of going forward?
We started, the first show was in 2014. I did it at the Hard Rock Convention Center in Las Vegas. And I think we had 20, maybe 25 exhibitors, and a good portion of them couldn't pay me. We did a second show in New York City, which is a lot bigger, but still maybe 40 or 50 exhibitors. My partners are trade show people. They've been in the trade show industries for 40 years, and they know trade show businesses, and they stick with what they know. So they're just applying all their years and years of experience in the trade show industry to a trade show business in cannabis, a B2B business in cannabis. I mean, our goal is to be the trade show best positioned when mainstream businesses decide to move into this industry. And now having an established show in Los Angeles, an established show in New York, and an established show in Boston, I think we've accomplished that objective.
And clearly you've had a number of years of growth. If we weren't on air, I'd probably typically ask you to go a little bit deeper to the numbers very specifically behind each one of those points of growth. But I think what you've indicated sort of relays what that might mean in terms of economics behind the growth. So we'll just keep that at assumptions for now. You can definitely create efficiencies. You can definitely take what you did right last time and do it a little better and create those efficiencies by that. But the continued growth, the revenue associated with various lines of growth, are you utilizing data yet? Are you, what kind of partnerships are you involved with? What area do we want to service going forward, right? Expos and media are really a relative term when you think about an industry that's demographic and geographic dynamic is pretty much everybody on planet Earth.
Yeah.
So we have to think about that sheer size and how do we address each one of those at a very high level. You don't have to do it all. So all these things is, to me, are really important in terms of growth, the economics behind them over the years. And you know, you've definitely done that. And as an investor, look at the respect and the reputation you have in the industry, the growth that you've incurred. Compare that with the growth going forward. That's exactly the type of person you want to invest in, especially at the growth round investing level, because what we want to do is take something that's already really, really good and just join the team and figure out how can we be great together. And you're kind of in that perfect place for really an early stage growth investor like us.
I appreciate you saying that. You know, one point that I think is important is that you add up all the things that you talked about and all of those make getting into this more and more difficult. It's not as easy today to get into the trade show business, the cannabis trade show business, as it was when I got into it 6 years ago. And every year you go by, it gets harder and harder because the barriers to entry just get greater and greater. The level that you have to be at right now to be competitive just get better and better. And then the other thing is you look at MJ Biz show and you say to yourself, this is what's possible. There's not going to just be one show. There's too much demand. There has to be other shows. And if they're capable of that, they're just scratching the surface. Every year it's getting bigger. So that gives you a glimpse at what the possibilities are.
Yeah, I very much agree with you, Dan. I mean, all we got to do is call Sheldon Adelson and see if there's any money in the trade show business, huh?
Yeah, he'll call you right back, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, he may not, but his Forbes article will be pretty clear that there is a great economic return when you do these right.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, any other questions for me? Any other thoughts that you want to have in closing?
Yeah, I think to explore partnership further, I want to know what you look at the future like. And one of the things you just told me, which I'd like to bring up again, is that the barriers to entry and the growth and all those things are more difficult right now, and they are. Part of that is because things are maturing so fast that when you look at the really big, big, big players that are likely to enter the space in 2019, you might not even have enough time to get to scale and before the thing really opens up and everyone's in the mix. Mm-hmm. So someone like yourself who's built a business for so long has a clear advantage. So I'm curious to know what your next 3, 6, 9, and 12 months goals are in terms of growth, in terms of partnerships, because I think those next 12 months are going to be extremely critical.
Yeah, I mean, we're already into 2020. Our three shows are set. With trade shows, you're at least a year out. So we have a lot of our floors already sold for 2019. And then again, we're going after mainstream companies. So we're spending a lot of time educating people that are not in the industry about the industry. It helps that you have relationship with that group, which my partners do. So that gives us another advantage. They've already worked with the people within those larger organizations. Our objective is, as I stated earlier, is we want to be the guys that convert mainstream businesses and get them into this industry. We'll leave the party to Las Vegas. We'll focus on the business side of this, and it's really where we're going.
Dan, I love that. You're speaking my language, because we at Arcadian have set out to do the exact same thing. That's why we invest in companies with growth, with CEOs that know what they're doing in terms of success, prior reputation, and investing in growth rounds in companies that are not considered marijuana businesses. Related businesses is a completely different level of risk. And being able to be involved in companies that don't touch the plant really allows you to operate institutional and adhere to compliance and think about the way institutional guys think. Your platform, I think, is very much in line with what we like to do at our firm. Hey, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed hearing more about it, and certainly like to stay involved. And last thing I'd like to say is that there's nothing more important than education, probably in general in life, but certainly in this industry. We're on the verge of being able to create something so special for the world, going to touch so many people in so many amazing ways. Right now, education is not only what people need, but it's also the way they're going to identify with brands to solve different problems for them for the rest of their life. So I think what you're doing right now is one of the most important aspects of this industry, and glad to be associated with you.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back on the show again, and we'll keep moving forward with this. I'll send you some more information, and maybe in a week or two, jump back on and give me some different thoughts. It's a little challenging to try to sell a company on a podcast, but I think the benefit to the people that are listening, especially in this industry, you know, this is really special. I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but who else is going to do something like this? This is to try to sell a business on. I think people are going to really benefit from it. If you'd like to be back on, we'd love to have you, and we'll just keep plugging away at it.
Anytime, Dan, if you value things I have to say, and they come from a thoughtful place, I'm willing to share them with you at any point in time, and I enjoy yours.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. And I'll shoot you over some more stuff about the company so that you can maybe take a deeper dive at it, and we can get to a future calls.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks again, Matt. Have a great weekend.
You too. Enjoy the snow. I'm pretty jealous.
Okay. Before we call our next guest, let me do a little business and thank one of our sponsors, Alt36, which is a payment processing platform that uses cryptocurrency on the Dash blockchain network. And what's great about this is it gives dispensaries an option other than cash. It's super interesting how this is done, but you really need to hear it from their CEO, Ken Ramirez. He's on MJ Bulls episode 12, does a great job explaining how cryptocurrency works and how it's all kinds of safeguards to protect people in it. Go back, listen to MJ Bulls episode 12, hear how Ken Ramirez has to do it. Alt36, great company, good people, alt36.com. Okay, now let me call our next guest. Hi, Larry. It's Dan Humiston.
Hey, Dan.
How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm doing fine.
It's just you and me today. Dina had to jump off. He had to take a call with somebody that was interested in talking to her about her deal. They heard it on the MJ Bulls podcast, and I love it when a plan comes together.
Wonderful.
I love it when a plan
comes
together.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
That's the way it's supposed to work. Wanted to talk to you about, again, for our listeners, in case you missed last week's show, Larry Mishkin from the Mishkin Law Group. Also is of counsel with the Hoban Law Group, handles all of their cannabis needs in Illinois. And as you mentioned last time, you work in every state in the country, but Hoban Law has offices or attorneys working throughout the world. But Larry's one of the many, in my opinion, the best.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So Larry is a reoccurring guest on our show. Whenever there's anything to do legally, I'm going to have Larry jumps on. And one of the things that we seem to be running into a little bit, Larry, and I wanted your opinion on this, or maybe explain it to me and the audience at the same time, is that I've had some people that talk to me about paying me with their stock or with some stock in their company and some cash. How does that work?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because you're right. For a lot of people who are interested in expanding, it's easier for them to give out shares of stock or an ownership interest if it's an LLC, as opposed to having to come out of pocket for cash. It's a system that can work as long as both sides have done their homework and are comfortable with what their options are. So for instance, the company that's possibly going to come in and buy you out, Dan, they're going to come and they're going to offer you 50% in cash and 50% in stock in their company. Now you got to go do some homework and you got to find out about this company. The first thing you need to find out is just in general, is it a viable company? Are they profitable? Are they making money? Is a share of stock in that company, can it be worth something now or ever? Once you do that, then there's a very big question that comes into play. And the question is whether the company that's purchasing you out is publicly traded or whether it's a private corporation or LLC. And the reason this is significant is because if it's publicly traded, then we're falling under the domain of the SEC. And every good lawyer knows exactly when to say that they've crossed the line on what they know. And as soon as we start talking about SEC regulations, I'm beginning to cross that line. The good news is that the majority of the purchases that we see are typically by smaller, closely held companies that are not publicly traded, and we do deal with those. The short answer on a publicly traded company is you need to make sure that you bring in someone with SEC experience and who understands all the regulations and can let you know specifically how that's going to work. Let's say it's an S-Corp or an LLC, and they're trying to expand, and this is how they're going to do it. Once you've determined whether or not you think the company has any value, the next thing you have to do is you have to read the company's operating documents. If it's a corporation, that would be the shareholders agreement. And if it's an LLC, that would be the operating agreement. And the reason why you have to read those is because you have to know what restrictions exist on the stock that they are giving you as compensation or for purchasing your business. What I mean by that specifically is most S-Corps or LLCs will have restrictions on the transferability of the stock or the ownership interest. This is done because in a smaller entity like that, people want to know who's coming in to be their co-owners. So usually operating agreements or shareholder agreements will have restrictions. Many of these documents, in fact, most of them will have written in a right of first refusal so that if you were going to try to sell your shares, then the people within the LLC would get first crack. Now that could work out because usually that still has to be done at the price you're asking for. But because of that right, a lot of times it's hard to go out and find a third-party purchaser who's going to spend the money and the time to do all of the due diligence to step in, only to find out at the end of the day that the other partners are exercising their right of first refusal and purchasing it for themselves. So it's important that you have an understanding of that. And if a company comes to you and says, take stock, you have to say to them, show me your shareholder agreement.
Okay. Let's say I'm looking at the shareholder agreement or the operating agreement, there are some aspects of it that I'm not comfortable with. Is it a document that can be altered to accommodate the deal, or is it take it or leave it type of documents?
The short answer is it can always be altered, but it depends on a number of things. First of all, within the document itself, it will usually have language that will explain how the document can be amended, but that will almost always require the input and the approval of the other shareholders or the other members of the LLC. Here's what the issue is. If it's a one or two person LLC and you're negotiating with both of them, then they may not have any problem saying, yeah, fine, we'll just amend our document so that you're happy with this phrase or this term and condition, and then we'll all sign off on it. If it's a larger group, that's probably harder to do because to amend the document, you almost always need the approval of all members or all shareholders.
Okay. All right, you glossed over it because we just don't want to get too deep into it. But if somebody were trading on the penny stocks, what are the OTC, pink sheets, over-the-counter stocks, in our case, you would defer to one of your colleagues within the Hoban Law Group who is an SEC person, and in somebody else were in that same situation, they should defer to an attorney who has that background.
Yeah, certainly. And I would certainly, if your listeners have attorneys that they work with and they're comfortable with them, then they should go to those attorneys and ask the attorneys to explain to them what the rules are. And usually what we're concerned about with a publicly traded company is whether there are certain rights or limitations imposed by law that come into play in terms of the transferability of those shares of stock. Big public companies too often have their own internal rules as to how this can happen because they're very sensitive to the fact that they're subject to audit by the SEC and they need to make sure that everything is done correctly. Any one of your listeners is always free to call me. And as soon as I reach that SEC point, the Hoban Law Group does in fact have attorneys who have quite a bit of experience with the SEC and some of them who have worked side by side with cannabis companies as they've gone public.
Well, there was a lot to digest. No offense, but sometimes it gets a little dry, and this is supposed to be entertainment. This is supposed to be entertaining as well as educational. So I don't want to overwhelm people. So Larry, thanks again for being on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for including me, and call me anytime you need me.
Sounds good. Have a great week.
Thanks. You too, Dan. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Well, that's our show this week. Everyone, thanks for listening. If you have any thoughts, any ideas, any comments, questions, criticism, whatever you want to send, please email me, connect@mjbulls.com. Also wanted to thank Jamie Humiston for putting together the music. All the music on the show is original music from Jamie Humiston, who just happens to be my son. So quick thanks to Jamie. Anyway, have a great week, everyone, and we will speak to you again next Sunday.